Hello, this is Jane Emerald. You're listening to Life Autistic. This is episode number 653. I got this morning and was listening to the radio, as usual. This is June. This is toward the end of June, 2008. I don't tend to talk about current events, but current events do bring up some interesting thoughts. And right now, there's flooding on the Mississippi River. Maybe, in the Midwest, there's flooding. Lots of rain. We wish we got some more here, but we're getting some, and I'm grateful for it. It'd be wonderful if we could get a little bit more. Not that I'm getting not that I want to get snitty with Heavenly Father for not having sent more. I'm grateful for what we've gotten. But they've been getting too much, I suppose. And there's flooding. And everybody's up in arms about the levees. Everybody's getting mad at the government for not having shored up the levees before this. You know, they hearken back to 1993, the last time when we had lots of flooding in that area. You know, and how people are complaining and how people are suffering. And I'm sorry that these things have to happen to people. I figure in 1993, people should have gotten the hint. I remember hearing news reports back then about whole cities being moved. You know, they were moving up ground so there wasn't this flooding problem anymore. And I really have problems respecting some people's thought processes, because it seems to go like this, at least from my perspective. When I look at it and when I see what happens, I have to shake my head a lot, because it's just mind-bending. You know, okay, here's the scenario. Take, for instance, you're a person living in this territory in 1993. Floods come through, right? Waters come up, get inside their houses. Everybody starts weeping and wailing and gnashing their teeth, saying, oh my gosh, you know, oh my gosh, I'm so horrible, please save me, please save me. So, it happens. Either nice neighbors or relief agencies or, by golly, I wish they wouldn't, but state and federal governments come swooping in and helps in the recovery of all these things. You know, they get their lives back, they get to rebuild, everything gets kind of redone, they get new furniture, everything else. You know, flood insurance takes care of all of the things. They get all kinds of new stuff. I'm not saying they haven't paid for it. I'm not addressing that issue. But how many people built right back where they did before, knowing that this place was prone to floods? Knowing that it would happen again. Of course, they said, oh, well, it probably won't happen for another 500 years. Well, here it is, 15 years later, and it happens again. And what do we hear again? The moaning, the complaining. Oh, my gosh! I can't believe it happened again. You go, why do you not believe it? It happened 15 years ago. Yeah, but it's only going to happen once every 500 years. Now, I could bring up scripture that says that there will be more floods and tempests coming on the last days. And I wouldn't normally bring this up, because I don't anticipate everybody's a very good, you know, Bible person. I'm not swearing that I'm incredibly good on it either, you know, but I've heard about it. Of course, I'm sure all these people are Christians, and someday I'll have to talk about what about the fact that so many people call themselves Christians, and it kind of dilutes the whole term, doesn't mean a lot. I much prefer the term followers of Christ, for those who are trying to do what Christ taught them to do. Christians, nothing. You know, when you say, well, the United States is a Christian nation, well, that's fine, but what the heck does that mean? doesn't mean it's a country full of the followers of Christ. That's why I like keeping the two terms separate. Christian means nothing. It's like people who wear crosses on chains around their neck. It's meaningless. That is not a symbol of how much they're trying to be a follower of Jesus Christ. It's a piece of jewelry. It's meaningless. Gangbangers who go around and kill people on a regular basis, they wear crosses around their neck too. Meaningless. Meaningless. Anyway, so I am totally amazed, you know, and I was listening to the radio, and there were people on there who said, you know, I remember 1993 and the devastation happened there, and they bailed me out then, and now it's 2008, and here I am, same situation, bailing out then, and it makes you almost want to go reach into the radio and shake that pompous braggart who seems to take such joy in his misfortunes and say, hello, why, I'm going to cover up the microphone because I'm going to be yelling, why don't you move to higher ground, you idiot? How many warnings, how many flooding outs do you need to get before you catch on? This place is prone to floods. Quit building your house here. It reminds you of that little song that I think a lot of little Christian kiddies used to sing when we were young, you know. The wise man built his house upon the rock. You know, and the other one, I'm sorry. See, I'm not going to say that I'm very good at this stuff at all. I didn't really sing this song much. We had other songs to sing. The foolish man built his house upon the sand. And I say we should add another verse. The foolish man built his house in a floodplain. The foolish man. Because it's just so true. It's like, hello. You know, when Hurricane Katrina, for instance, oh, the greatest natural disaster ever to happen in U.S. history, and you go, boy, you know what? That's a wonderful thought. I bet you in 2 years we'll have a bigger one. And Katrina, well, will never be forgotten. But people will actually have fights about, I think Katrina was worse than what you had. We really suffered. And you know what? The people who return to New Orleans, I think the first thought that should have been given to that was, we will no longer give you flood insurance. We will no longer bail you out. The federal government refuses to come and help any of you people here. If you insist on living in an underwater bowl, which is what New Orleans is. New Orleans is actually below sea level. That means when something swells enough to go over the levees, it's going to go in the bowl. It's going to fill up the bowl. And the people who are sitting there going, oh, my life was destroyed. It was so horrible. I'm so sorry. You know, it's like, hello, move away. Oh, no, this is my home. This is where I've always lived. And you go, you've always lived like an idiot? Stop it. And I have family in the area around New Orleans. I hope and pray they choose to live on higher ground. I really do. Even close by. You know, not everything in Louisiana is 2 feet below sea level. Good part of it is above sea level. You don't have to worry about these things. Stay away from the Mississippi River. Don't live right on the edge. Don't live in the bowl that New Orleans is. Don't do it. That's just tempting fate. You know, please don't behave just patently stupidly. And I'm not saying, you know, that we can find someplace that's absolutely safe from problems that are happening. You know, things are going to happen. I don't think there is any real safe place. But you can avoid places that just by their nature are just disaster magnets. I like living in New Orleans. Why? Because I love being flooded out every 2 or 3 years. I love the chance that we have to spend billions and billions of federal money to install pumps to pump out water all the time. And they do. If you think I'm exaggerating about the fact that they have these huge, you know, water muck pumps, and their job is basically to make sure that the canal system, that is the big water catchment system, that it's constantly being pumped out to Lake Pontchartrain or out to sea or to someplace else outside of the bowl. This is paid for with everybody's tax money. You know, part of my tax money pays for this stuff going on in New Orleans. I am propping up what I would consider to be a stupid situation when people could move 10 miles away, be above sea level, and be a whole lot safer. A whole lot safer. Not completely safe. There's still going to be hurricanes. There's still going to be tornadoes and problems and other things happening down there. But you won't be living in a bowl with a bullseye on your back. I was going around saying, I intend to be a flood victim. And then the audacity of almost saying underneath that thing on your shirt of, I intend to be a flood victim and I intend for you to keep saving me every single time because I choose to behave stupidly. I don't understand that mentality. I live in basically one of the safer places. Tornadoes don't often occur where I am, just because of the fact that it's down kind of in a valley, and tornadoes don't tend to hit valleys particularly. But it's also way up high. We are not in a floodplain particularly. It doesn't rain much here. On the off chance it does rain, we just have good grass, and the gardens don't need to be watered so much. You know, that's wonderful. We tend to pay for our own water. Hopefully we don't take too much federal money just for living. I live in a grassland. We mostly do cattle grazing here because it's the only thing that makes much sense. There's not a lot of other agriculture, at least in my part of the place, for the simple reason that it doesn't make a lot of sense. There's not a ton of water here. And if there's not a ton of water, you don't use a ton of water. Anyway, so, I'm not saying that we're better than people in New Orleans or in the Midwest today who are having flooding problems. What I am saying is, hey, here's sensibility. Don't build your house in a gully, in a flash flood zone. Don't do that. Build your house a couple of hundred feet away that's up on some real land. Let the gully wash out. It's not going to be that big of a deal because your house isn't stuck in it. You get the impression that these people choose to build their houses in gullies. It's really difficult to drum up any sympathy for these people. My advice is, move out. Well, I've got investments here. I've got my house here. And you go, yes, but you're going to get wiped out one day. Well, it's okay. I've got insurance. I can handle it. No, you don't have insurance. What you pay on your insurance is a pittance compared to the almost guarantee that you will be wiped out. People like me who live someplace that's relatively safe, the chances of me getting wiped out are next to nil. My high insurance rates for what I will never use or rarely use, you know, the insurance company makes a profit off of me, let me tell you. No, it gets pumped into yours. Your insurance rates might be double mine, but how much they're going to be paying out to you over the life of your home is probably quadruple or quintuple. Five times, probably. Just because you're going to have something happen. It's almost a fixed guarantee. Why do people behave like this? Is that the Venus part of me, the obsessive part of me that just says, why are you behaving so monumentally stupidly? Just because 500,000 of your buddies do the same thing? You know, well, we got a big town down here. We just can't lick up roots and leave. You go, yes, you can. Because you can choose to, or God's going to wipe you out, and someday there won't be a federal government to save your butt. Someday your insurance company is just going to go, oh, we can't, you know, we just declared insolvency. Well, I paid my insurance for years. And you go, tough little titties, man. Rule number one of all this stuff is you should be handling your own risk as well as you can instead of forcing everybody else to pay for your risky behavior. Living in a floodplain is risky behavior. Why are you doing it? That's where all the nice houses are. I have a really great yard. It gets watered all the time, sometimes by the river rising up. It doesn't rise up very much, though. That's okay. Well, very good. We haven't had a flood in 5 years. My wife and I were up in Logan, Utah. Logan, Utah is a beautiful place. It's like a little alpine community in northern Utah. Our daughter is in AmeriCorps, based out of Logan, Utah. So that's our tie to it at the moment. Anyway, it's beautiful. It's green. It's fantastic. Just marvelous. And of course, Lisa, while we were driving through it, oh, she's just talking about how wonderful it was. And I attested, this is beautiful here. But then I remind her the thing I said, I've heard, and it's true, that they have really hard winters here. It snows. It snows a lot in Logan, Utah, and all around it. In fact, when we were driving there, here in the first part of June, they were still getting snow. We actually had to take our jackets, our coats with us. And we were wearing them because it was cold. I mean, it was like in the 50s. But up on the higher elevations all around Logan, it was snowing. Still, in June. That's the indication of the issue. In winter time, this is late spring, coming into summer soon. In the winter time, you know, that snow up there is in the valley that Logan is in. And, you know, so it's going to be green in the spring. It's going to be really nice. But you pay for that. Lisa doesn't like cold weather, particularly. That's one of the reasons why we live in Tucumcari, is because it's a temperature. The climate here is something she likes. She doesn't like the tropics. I don't mind the tropics. Tropics are good for me. I'm not a big fan of humidity, but I can handle that better than I can handle other things. I don't mind the cold particularly. I'm not a big fan of hot. You know, it gets hot here. It doesn't get particularly cold. But you also don't have a lot of the things that would that normally come with having a more varying environment. You know, we don't get a ton of snow. Sometimes we'll get snow. Nothing like they get in Logan, Utah. But of course, we don't have this beautiful alpine meadow looking place. And so when it came down to it, we were talking about it. Lisa said, you know, it's beautiful, it's wonderful, I'd love to visit there, but you know what, I don't think I can live there. And you go, that's probably pretty wise. A pretty wise thing to think. Because, you know, can't... You can't have that really pretty stuff without lots of cold and lots of snow at other times of the year. So, There you go. That's kind of the thing there, you know. You can't have rice paddies. You can't have beautiful, fertile soil in the Midwest without larger possibilities of flooding. You know, nothing grows particularly here. We've got grass, and you know, most people would consider it pretty substandard grass. But we also don't have those inherent problems, you know, where I live, in the American Southwest, as it's typically called. The southwestern part of the United States of America. I wouldn't live on a floodplain. I might want to farm on a floodplain and take my chances because, you know, a good year is an excellent year and you'll get rich. A bad year is a horrible year and you're going to suffer terribly. The fact that, you know, farmers and ranchers really get pissy. Sorry, I hate to use that term, but it's true. When things take a downturn and they want the federal government to bail them out, you know. I find that really disingenuous. Of course, they always say, well, we produce the food, and if you like your food, you'll pony it up whenever we ask for it. And it's like, you know what? No. I am not of that. I said, if you're in the business of doing these things, that's part of the risk. That's part of the risk. You know, nobody's propping up my job, for instance. But I'm in a pretty low-risk job. Nobody's getting rid of computers. Computers are just becoming more a part of everybody's lives. So a person like me gets more and more and more and more and more and more work. And that's just reality. That's just the way it is. Can't change it. Can't make it any different. You know, if you don't like farming, that's fine. Don't do farming. Do something else instead. Don't get all weird about the fact that you think you're making some great sacrifice for everybody. This is you're not. You're not making some great sacrifice for everybody. Somebody else will do it. You know, people from other countries would love to come to the United States and do the job that you don't want to take the risk of doing. Or that you get weird about the risks of. Somebody else will gladly come and do it. Try for lower cost. Then you'll get all angry and upset because you're not making enough, you know. You're having to curtail your travel or something in your SUV or your big old monster honking truck, which I know a lot of them have. You know, and they write off of their tax because they said it's a farm need. And I guess in a way it is, but they certainly keep them awfully nice for something that's basically supposed to be a work truck. Anyway, you know, I don't mean to jump on people for the choices and decisions they make. What I get upset about is when they start getting cranky and obnoxious and want everybody else to prop them up. Flood victims want all this relief help. They want, you know, 100,000 people to come in and help them rebuild their house nicer than it was before with brand new furniture on somebody else's nickel. And it's like, I'm sorry, I come from a background that says, hey, you need to be more of a producer than a consumer, you know? If you're not giving more than you're getting, then you're not worth a lot to anybody. I don't care what your intelligence is. I don't care anything like that. You don't deserve much of anything. The fact that you're given things, you should be grateful for. And whenever you can make a change that makes everybody else's circumstances better, I think that's being kindly to everybody else. Please move out of the floodplains. Feel free to farm it, but know that every few years or so, it's going to get flooded out and destroyed, and you're not going to have a chance to replant. And that it should be nobody else's responsibility to save you from that. You should plan for it. Don't spend all of your money every single year. On good years, you should put some back for lean years. When times are tough. Put your house someplace that makes a little bit of sense. At least it's a little bit safer. So everybody else doesn't have to pay through the nose for your circumstances. Please be kindly to other people. Since we all since we have chosen to resort to insurance and kind of communistic, socialistic government type programs to try and minimize the problem, please be kind to your neighbor. Please be kind, since that's the way things are done. Don't live in New Orleans. I know there's tons of money to be made as a tourist trap. I know there is. Please don't. Please don't live stupidly and then expect everyone else to bend over backwards to make up for your stupidity. I live in a place that's going to flood constantly. I expect everybody to bend over backwards and make sure that I don't suffer from living someplace where, heck, people shouldn't particularly be living there. Certainly shouldn't be building multi-million dollar houses with insurance policies on it that everybody else is going to have to make good on. Because I choose to live someplace nice or someplace that's relatively safe, that bad things aren't going to happen to my house particularly. But I get to pay high insurance rates anyway to make up for the fact that you're going to be paid millions of dollars on a regular basis to take care of this thing. Please be kind. Please be kind to me by being just a little bit intelligent. This is Jay Nemro. I hope I didn't pick on too many people. Be kind. Be kind to people. Try to be more contributing to people's, to the general welfare. Try not to be just a constant drain on it. Just because. This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This has been episode number 653. Where's my pointer? There it is. Have a great day.